spoke about Hakoras HaTov, and that the first principle of Hakoras HaTov is, as the name represents, recognizing good. That people should recognize benefits that they have in this world and not take them for granted. In order to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the first step of doing that is being a Makir Tova, of not being, not only not ungrateful, but being insensitive to benefits that you have from other people, from the world, from the Rabbanu Shel Olam directly, right? That you're benefiting good things, you don't take them for granted. That's the first thing that we spoke about last week in detail. Second thing, the second level of Hakoras HaTov, once you recognize even the smallest good, right? Because if you only recognize big good things, you're not going to ever think that anything's big enough to really recognize. So you have to condition yourself to recognize even the smallest things. We said even when it rains, shouldn't be happy just for the downpour, but for every drop. Person wins a lottery of $1 million, you should be happy for every penny, not just for the $1 million or whatever. So, and that's the idea of Dayenu on Pesach night. Everything alone would have been enough to thank the Rebbe Shlom for. Not only all of it together. Every detail was also worth recognizing and thanking the Rebbe Shlom for. Okay. Second thing is to recognize what is really good. And it really fits with this Sedra. We've said it many times. I'm going to say it again. And it is Nogea to this week's Sedra, so it's even more relevant. What is good? Tov. Right? So the word Tov, right, means good, because I'll say, ain't Tov ela Torah. Tov is Torah. Right? What does that mean? There's no other good in the world except Torah. And it says in Bereshis, Vayar Elohim ki Tov, God saw it was good. And we said that to understand that on the simple level is good for a simpleton, but after you get out of first grade, right, it's absurd to understand it on a simple level. What's a simple level? God said, let there be fish. Then Vayar Elohim, he looked at them, ki Tov, and he saw they're good. Hey, it looks like fish. What's it called? Not bad, you know. Another fish, it looks pretty much like a fish. Hey, pretty good. Pat himself on the back and he said, hey, it looks pretty good to me. It looks like, you know, what's it called? I guess that's what fish are, so it's absurd. The Rebbe Shlom knew exactly where he was created. You have to look at it and say, hey, it looks good to me. So what does it mean? Vayar Elohim ki Tov. Says the Ramban, what it means is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates things by willing them into being. Vayomer Elohim. Right? Rebbe Shlom says, let there be fish, and they're fish. He wills them into being. That's, in our terminology, it doesn't really work like that. The Rebbe Shlom doesn't speak. But in our terminology, the Rebbe Shlom's speech brings things into creation. Then, the thing exists. What gives it the ability to continue to exist? Now it has to get a cue. It has to be able to continue. What gives it the continuity? Vayar Elohim. God looks at it. But just like he brings it into being by speaking it into being, he gives it continuity by looking at it. Vayar Elohim, he looks at it. Ki Tov, that now it can continue to exist. So the word Tov really means something that is viable and that can continue to exist. So nothing has the power to continue to exist forever except Torah. Torah is basically eternal. So Tov, real Tov, which is eternal, is Torah. Whatever the Torah says, whatever is eternal, is eternal. So real Tov, real eternity is Torah. That's why in Maisa Bereshis, it doesn't say ki Tov directly on anything except light. Vayar Elohim es ha'or ki Tov. All the other thing, it just says Vayar Elohim ki Tov. Indirectly, it says he saw that thing was good, but it doesn't mention the thing. Because all other material things that God created are not necessarily eternal. There will come a time, according to some, that the entire physical world will cease to exist. So nothing that God created in the 6 days is eternal except for that original light. The original light was the light of Sheshishimei Amaisa, Shiva Shimei Bereshis, which is eternal. And that really is the light of Torah, because that light was hidden away for tzaddikim, and the Sfarim say, the Zohar says it was hidden away in the Torah. So that light is a spiritual light which is eternal. That's the light of Olam Haba. That's hidden in this world in the Torah. Therefore, the only thing that was Tov directly was the light. Everything else is Tov because it generates eternal things if you use them properly. But the thing itself may not be eternal. So it doesn't say Ki Tov specifically on the thing itself, only indirectly to it. But on the light it says Ki Tov. It's relevant to this week's Sedra in a different way. It says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Vatireyu Ki Tov, she saw he was good, and therefore she hid him 3 months. That's the pasuk. So the Medrash says Ki Tov means she saw the light of the Shechinah with him. Like we said, Tov means something eternal. She saw something eternal with him, that light of the Shechinah. When Moshe was born, the house filled up with that light. So she saw the Ki Tov, and therefore she knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to survive, and she hid him for 3 months. That's the Medrash. What's the simple meaning of the pasuk, though? The simple meaning doesn't seem to make any sense. She hid him because if she didn't hide him, the Egyptians would come and kill him. So she saw he was good, and because he was good, she hid him for 3 months, that the Egyptians shouldn't kill him. And if what if Moshe Rabbeinu's mother saw he wasn't good? He was a little brat, right? Kid crying all the time, Resikol, making trouble in the house. So what she would have not hit him, right? She would have put a sign out, please come and drown this kid, right? He's a little brat. Now, obviously, to the mother, it didn't make a difference if he was a good kid or not a good kid. She's going to hide him, that he shouldn't be murdered. So why does the Torah make it dependent on the fact that he was good? Says the Rashbam, the way I understand the Rashbam at least, says the Rashbam the following. Moshe Rabbeinu was born 3 months premature. Now, especially even in those days for sure, a 3 month premature baby didn't have too much of a chance of surviving. Hiding a baby from Paro, if you were caught, probably what would happen is the whole family would be killed for going against Paro's decree, right? Or they'd be imprisoned, or something serious would happen to them. Probably killed. That's what the Nazis did. If you hit a Jewish baby and you were found, the whole family was killed. So it was a danger to the whole family to hide a Jewish baby. However, if you didn't hide the Jewish baby, it surely, the Paro's shluchim would have come, searched the house, and what's it called, and killed the baby. So the baby was for sure in danger of its life. If you did hide it, you had a chance of getting away with it, and everybody would be safe. So you're allowed to put the family in danger to save a baby from a for sure danger, put the family in an indefinite danger. But if the baby's not going to survive, if he's not viable, then there's no way that you're allowed to put an entire family in danger to save a baby who's not going to survive. And Moshe Rabbeinu, on the surface, should not have survived. He was a 6 month baby. He was 3 months premature. But Vatireyu Ki Tov, she saw he was viable. That he wasn't like any premature baby. He was a viable, even though he was born in the 6 month, he was a fully viable child. He was Ki Tov. So therefore she hit him. Therefore she had a right to put the family in danger to save him, because he obviously was a viable child. So over here also, Tov means he was viable.
Was that a miracle? Was that a nice thing?
That he was born 6 months? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Beyond that, we find other cases where this idea of Tov is something, means it has something that can exist, it can continue to exist. The word Tov doesn't appear in the first of the Aseres HaDibros, in Yisro. It says, Man Yarichun Yomecha, Alhu Adom Hashem Elokech Adosein Loch. That's in Kibbur Avraham. The second of the Aseres HaDibros in Veshanan says, L'man Yarichun Yomecha U'L'man Yitav Loch. So why in the second version it says Tov, and the first version not? So the Gemara says in Bava Kama, because the first luchos were broken. The simple meaning over there is that since they were going to be broken, they would have symbolized that good was broken for Klal Yisrael. But according to what we're saying, it's more significant. It couldn't say Tov in the first luchos. That the nusach of the, according to this, the nusach of the first luchos is what's in Yisro. The nusach of the second luchos was different. and it was what's in Voschana. Even though the Torah doesn't seem to say that, Torah says v'chosafti ala luchos eisasher hayokosu ala luchos harishonim. It means about, not exact. The second luchos were a little bit different than the first. But since the first one God knew would not remain, they'd be broken, so the word tov couldn't be there. Tov means something that's viable, it's going to remain. And this wasn't going to remain. Hodu Lashem ki tov, ki li'olam chasdo. Why is God good? Because he's eternal. Ki li'olam chasdo. So all this points to the fact that tov means something eternal. Therefore, hakaras hatov means not only recognizing good, recognizing where you benefit, but recognizing from the good what is really good. What's really good in this world? There are things that are good temporarily, for the moment, and there are things that are good eternally. And a person should be able to discern what is the real good things in this world and what are the apparent good things, but are not really the most important things. What the difference, what you make your what's it called, priorities. What do you run your life around? The things that are good temporarily, short-lived, or the things that are good, they're going to remain good forever. And if you recognize what is really good and what is merely relatively good, then you'll make the priority the really eternally good things over the things that are good, but good only temporarily. And that's what a person has to do, pretty much, to make the right choices in this world.
What is good temporarily? Good for...
Yeah, person, what's it called? Person wants to eat something, okay? And he's going to benefit, it tastes good, and he'll get, knee zone from it, he'll write, there'll be nourishment from it, or whatever. That's good, but it's good that it'll last a day. Okay? And it's awesome. So the Yetzer Hara says, enjoy yourself.
What's awesome?
It's good. What? The thing that he's eating.
Ah.
Okay. He wants to eat a ham sandwich.
What if he's eating something that's not absurd?
No, so then there's no conflict. What's over there was a conflict. Or you cannot eat that and do what is good eternally. So when there's a conflict, you'll choose the eternal good over the short-lived good. Okay? Or you want to eat something, and that's a short-lived good, but if you don't eat that, you can do something else, right, that will be more eternally good for you. Right? When there's no conflict, there's no problem. Right? Then you can do anything. You can do the short-lived good and the long-lived good too. There's no conflict between them. What we're talking about was a conflict, where it's either doing a short-lived good or something that's eternally good. If you know how to recognize what's eternally good over what is temporarily good, you'll make the right choice.
So short-lived good isn't really good. I mean, good might be...
No, it could be good too, right? But, for instance, I can go now and I'll give you an example where it's not so clear. Not a ham sandwich, okay? I can eat lunch. I feel good. I'll be nourished, taste good, but I have a chance to go be Menachem Avil. And the person's not going to be around to be Menachem Avil after lunch. So it's either now I can go do a mitzvah that I will have something eternal from, or I can eat lunch, which I'll have something good, tasty, but it's temporary. Which one should you do? L'chaorei, you should go be Menachem Avil, even though you may have to skip lunch for it, right? So you're going to miss the temporary good, but you're exchanging it for something that's eternally good. It's not that it's usher to eat lunch. It's just that you want to make a choice of what you should do where you'll have more of a benefit. Pick the one that you'll have a benefit eternally rather than the one that you'll have a benefit temporarily.
Or what if you need that cough from the lunch you're going to eat?
Yeah, okay. So then that is the cheshbon you have to make sometimes, right? Eating the lunch will be more beneficial in the long run than going to be Menachem Avil. It could be in that situation the better you should eat the lunch. Right? If the Targum, we learn from the Pasuk V'chai Bohem, the mitzvahs were meant to live by, not to die by, that you are allowed to transgress many of the mitzvahs, right, with certain exceptions, in order to live. You're allowed to mechal Shabbos, you're allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, and so on, right? Because mechay bohem. So it's clear that that pasuk is talking about living in this world. Because if it's talking about living in the next world, it has nothing to do with eating on Yom Kippur and living, or whatever. We're not talking about this world. So it's clear that when Chazal learned that pasuk, the mechay bohem is going on living in this world. Better to live in this world than to die because you're keeping a mitzvah of Shabbos, Kashrus, Yom Kippur, or whatever under most circumstances. The Targum, when he's Matargim, that pasuk says, the Chai Bohem Le'alma Da'asi. Those are the mitzvahs that you will live in the next world. But the Chora, that's Mamish Kenegit Chazal. The way Chazal learned the pasuk has nothing to do with the next world, it's to do with this world. And we learn from here again that your life supersedes the mitzvah under most circumstances. The answer is, the reason that you are Mechal Shabbos to save somebody's life is not because living in this world is more important than keeping Shabbos. But it's because if you are Mechal Shabbos to save somebody's life, that will be what's better for that person in Olam Haba. Because they have more Shabbos. Chalil of Shabbos Echad, you can have more Shabbos. That's not always the case. But for a good portion, if you, the guy dies, he's not going to be able to keep Shabbos anymore. If he lives, he'll be able to keep more Shabbos. So what's better for that person for eternity is better to be Mechal this Shabbos and keep a lot of other Shabbos than to keep this Shabbos and not be able to keep any more Shabbos. So it's not that living in this world is more important than mitzvahs. But living in this world is what's better for you eternally most of the time. But sometimes not like that. If it means murdering somebody to save your life, it's better to be killed and not murder somebody, because murdering somebody is so serious that even living, because you murdered somebody, the murdering of somebody ruins your Olam Haba much more than you would have ruined it had you died now. So it's better to die now and not murder somebody to save your life. Because the cheshbon is not what's better for me now. The cheshbon is what's better for me eternally. Sometimes what's better for me eternally is to go against the mitzvah and to live. Sometimes what's better for me eternally is to keep the mitzvah and die. So you have to make that cheshbon. What is better for you eternally? Same thing over here. Sometimes what's better for you eternally is to go be Menachem Avil and not eat lunch. But sometimes what's better for you eternally is to eat the lunch and not be Menachem Avil. Because eating that lunch will benefit you eternally more, but not because eating lunch is more important than Menachem Avil, but because in your situation, eating that lunch may be eternally important for you. If you don't eat the lunch, you're going to have more of a loss than you would have had you eaten the lunch and missed one mitzvah. But those are, again, there are cheshbonos when you're allowed, when you're not allowed to do that. Not just hefker. But yes, there are situations where that may be the cheshbon. Any question on this?
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't say in the Constitution that two people are in the desert and there's only one cup of water, and you drink it and let the other person to suffer?
You're not killing him. The idea of murdering, you're not murdering the other person. You can't commit suicide either. The reason is because you're not sure whose life is more important. How can you take somebody else's life? Maybe his life's more important than yours. So how do you have the right to save your life at the expense of somebody else? On the other hand, if you have a canteen, it's your water. It's not talking about it's his water. If it's his water, you don't drink it. He drinks it. Okay? You don't grab it away from him and drink it. But it's your water, right? Then you'd have to give it up to him. We have the same thing. Who said that he's more important than you?
What if he's a Talmud Chachamim?
It doesn't make a difference, really. It's not so posh. There was a Shaila, we'll end with this, in Rav Meisel's, Svi Hirsch Meisel's, brings a Shaila, that there was a selection of children to go to the gas chambers in Auschwitz. And they took younger children. They saw that they weren't worth working, so they were going to be killed. And older children they could use for work. So how did they decide? They didn't accept the, you know, the kids say how old they were. They went by height. Whoever passed under a bar without, you know, without, what's it called, stooping down, just could pass over the bar, they went to the gas chambers. Whoever was taller than that went to forced labor. One of the boys in this group, it's a group of about 400 boys, who was older, but he was short. So he went under the thing, he was put with the guys going to the gas chamber. A younger boy who was taller went to the other side. He was not going to be killed then. The older boy, the younger boy who was taller, was not such a great Talmud Chacham, whatever. He was a nice kid, but not more than that. One of the other boy, the short boy who was older, was an established Mavish, a Ben Torah, real star. Everybody knew this guy's going to be something special. So the younger boy came to Rav Meisel's, and he said that he has money to bribe, he has hidden away money or something important to bribe the guard to let this kid go. So Meisel said, that's very nice, but you know that the Nazis will never let that unless somebody takes his place. He said, yeah, I figured that out too. I'm going to take his place. He said, what are you talking about? He said, he's a bigger Talmud Chacham than me, and the world needs him, the world doesn't need me. So I'll take his place, I can bribe the guard, he'll let us make the switch, can I do it? I just want to know I'm not losing my Olam Haba if I do this. Meisel says, I can't answer you, I don't know. You're not allowed to sacrifice your life for somebody else. Because Talmud Chacham, not Talmud Chacham, who said that your life is not more important to the Ribbono Shel Olam or to the world than his? He said, I don't know if that's the halacha. He said, maybe, but I'm very, very, very much me that may not be. And you don't have a right to give up your life for somebody else, just like you don't have a right to take somebody's life to save your life. You have no right to give up your life to save somebody else's life. Because basically, we don't know who's more important. And even if he's a bigger Talmud Chacham, it could be that that's, you don't have a right to sacrifice your life for that. So he doesn't say there what, he didn't tell him. He refused to tell him that it was okay. He came back to ask a few times. He told him, I can't pass him the shaila. I don't know. So I don't know either.